Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, thanks so much for tuning in today. I am so excited to be here this afternoon. My name is Joe Bender, and this is Connecting Faith. And today we get to talk about moms. Mother's Day is coming up, of course. And if you are a mom or you have a mom, which I think is most of us, then we will try to chat a bit about not only what makes mom special and amazing and maybe frustrating and challenging every once in a while, but also what's important for moms every single day. And we'll get into that in just a bit with author Becky Johnson. You may recognize her name from involvement with Women of Faith, or maybe you've read one of her 40 books. But when I saw the title of this book, I just knew that I needed to have this conversation, because my assistant producer passed it across the desk to me, and it said, get this, Nourished, A Search for Health, Happiness, and a Full Night's Sleep. And I thought, any book that's going to teach me how to get a full night's sleep with children, that one is one that I need to read, absorb, and learn from. So whether you're having trouble getting a full night's sleep because you are a new mom, and maybe you are just praying that that newborn will sleep 3 or 4 different hours at the same time, that would be great. Or maybe you are a mom, I won't say old mom, maybe you have older children. Maybe you have older children, and the sleeplessness is more of, when are they coming home? What are they doing? Who are they hanging out with? Where is my car? Or maybe your kids are well beyond the living in your home years, and you are just challenged with other reasons why you may not be sleeping. Well, we're going to talk about how to nourish yourself, body, soul, and spirit as well today. Let me introduce you to my guests, and we will get started with the show. Becky Johnson is the author, co-author, or collaborator of more than 40 books. She's a natural storyteller who has inspired and entertained audiences for years. Most recently, she co-authored We Laugh, We Cry, We Cook, along with a blog by the same name with her daughter, Rachel Randolph, who is also the co-author of this book. She and her husband, Greg, live in Denver, Colorado. And you can catch more about Becky at her website, which is laughcrycook.com. We'll have a connection with that on our website as well. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. I just have to tell the audience what we were chatting about just earlier. I said to Becky, you know, you're probably about 10 years older than me, and I found no satisfaction in the fact that you are still dealing with some of the hurriedness and craziness and lack of sleep that I'm dealing with now, because now I don't even know what I have to look forward to. I'm still going to be dealing with these things 10 years from now.
Well, I can tell you that life does not necessarily get less crazy or less busy, but this is true, and this is where I give you hope. I have learned how to slow down those stressful thoughts. I have learned how to slow down on the inside. Now, sometimes it takes me a little while, but I know how to do it. I have a plan. So when I get crazy on the outside, I know what I can do to slow down and nourish myself on the inside. And honestly, I think I'll talk about this topic till I die, because it has made such a difference in my life.
Well, that was my favorite chapter. I'm trying to find the title. Your Mind is a Garden, where you were talking about that it is so important to change the way that we think about what we think about, because challenges, whether it's a health crisis, a mini challenge, you know, my son treating someone badly and me being upset by it. I mean, no matter what the challenges are, you just give a real focus on how we are to approach each of those in our own mind first before we open our mouths to talk about it.
It's so important. You know, I've written 3 books. I do a lot of collaborations. I've written 3 books with brain doctors. So that was so interesting for me to learn some techniques on how to slow down our brain. And then when I juxtapose that against the scriptures about renewing our mind and think on these things, what is evident to me is that nobody has a perfectly balanced brain. Nobody comes to peace naturally. If we just go with our natural thoughts, in fact, our brain is sort of like Velcro to negativity and Teflon to positive thoughts. And that's why the scriptures are always talking to us about renewing our mind and thinking this way and have this mind in you that was in Christ Jesus. It's because it's not natural. It is a proactive thing. And I remember hearing of people that would talk about doing soul work, and I had no idea what that was. It just sounded very mystical to me. What is soul work? But what I've discovered is this is soul work. It is renewing your mind. It is going against the natural, especially women. We have this desire to fix or worry. Those are our natural things. We want to rescue, fix, worry. Well, in order to do that, what is opposite of what is our natural instinct, we really have to be proactive about how to grab hold of those thoughts as if your mind is a garden, pull out the weeds. And I've begun to believe that anytime I have a stressful or worried thought, it is a signal that I need to stop, pause, like drop and roll, and look at what the truth is and spend a little time there. And I've got a few techniques I can share whenever you're ready for me to, but they have been extremely helpful for me.
I'm ready for you to share those techniques right now. I think that would be a great time to talk about how do we do that, because it's true. I know it's a huge chunk of your book, but share one or two if you can. It seems like it's work to be able to stop before we react. And that may not be reaction, like something comes out of my mouth, but once I start that reaction of starting to worry about something or try to think of a solution about something, I'm already down that road. And how do I get from even starting down that road?
That's so true. You know, you can have a headache and then your mind just jumps to, oh, I've got a tumor, and you've got your funeral scheduled. We are so quick to take those negative thoughts and just expand on them. So here is a few just really practical things that I've learned that have helped me so much. The first one is that if you're starting to feel a stressful or painful thought or a looping negative thought, scientists have discovered that any kind of movement at all will sort of immediately calm you, especially if you're stressed out. So that could be walking. It could be rocking, sitting in a porch swing. You know how we calm a baby by going back and forth? It doesn't ever change. The brain calms as you sort of take a little moment to just walk, whatever you want to do. You know, in fact, I have gotten up in the middle of the night with a stressful thought, and I have just sort of done the ragdoll thing where we just go back and forth. And that sort of disconnects the mind from a traumatic or painful looping thought right there. And then at that moment, I look and I say, do I want to deal with this right now? Do I really want to deal with this thought? If it's not a good time, then I have learned, and this is like the price of therapy right here, I have learned that sometimes it's best to just do a healthy distraction, something that just totally takes your focus away, whatever that is. Maybe it's cooking, or maybe it is a project, a writing project, whatever it is. If it's not the right time to deal with a thought, it's okay to do a healthy distraction. Then if it is time to deal with that thought, look at it. Look at what you're feeling. So let's say that you're feeling worry. Go underneath that thought and find out the one sentence really that is causing that worry. Perhaps you've got a child that is a prodigal, and your worry is, my child is going to die. I'm going to get the phone call. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you look at that thought, and then you ask the Lord, Lord, would you replace that thought with truth? Sometimes it helps to sort of turn the thought upside down. So let's say, I'm afraid my child is going to die. Maybe you would turn the thought around, my child is going to live. You can turn it around another way. I am going to live, and I'm going to be life to my child. The Lord is life. So you just begin to play with that thought and turn it around until you sort of feel like the Lord is saying, okay, click, click, here is the truth. You meditate on that truth. And once you've got the truth down, you will be amazed how just dealing with that one sentence that caused you pain, suddenly you'll feel a lightening in your spirit and your mood. So all these moods, all these worries really kind of narrow down to one funnel of one thought. And if you can get to that and let the Lord do a little surgery on it, you will find that your life is suddenly a lot less stressful.
I love what you said about getting up and moving and how that really kind of can reset you. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of these thoughts that I have will, when I'm worrying about something, whether it's something silly like I don't know, something for the next day or something major, will be in bed. I will wake up in the middle of the night. I'll start thinking about something. I can't quit thinking about it. And if I lay there in bed, I have a friend who's in biblical counseling. She said, when you're stressed out, start going through the alphabet and start thinking about words that describe God. And so I'll lay there and I'll think, God is A, awesome.
Oh,
God
like
is
that.
B, bold. God is C, courageous. God is D, divine. Then I get to E and I'm like, I don't know. I'm just worried. I can't even think of a word for E. And then it'll be worse. But if I could just get up and walk around a little bit and stop just thinking about the fact that I'm laying there worrying and not able to sleep, maybe that would start that process a little more. And I'll think about a word for E.
Yes. And you know what else? Another reason why we worry in the middle of the night and then you wake up. Some people wake up with sort of a sense of dread, just sort of comes over them. It's because your brain is losing nutrition and neurotransmitters during the night. And so sometimes getting up and having a little snack, like a little bit of cereal, or, you know, if you wake up in the morning, I just tell myself, because I'm one of those people that if I just went with my mood, the first thing when I wake up, it's usually a vague sense of dread. And I just tell myself, do not believe any thoughts until you've had breakfast. I have my coffee, have breakfast, the world is in its right place again.
Huh. For sure, coffee.
Yeah.
Well, we are talking today with author Becky Johnson. She has written a brilliant book with her daughter, Rachel Randolph, called Nourished, A Search for Health, Happiness, and a Full Night's Sleep. Well, we are so lucky to have copies of her book to give away. We would love to put in your hands. If you are a mom and you feel like you need to be nourished, or maybe you have a daughter who is a new mom and she feels a need to be nourished, well, we'd love to get that in your hands. And you know what? We have just a bundle of Faith Radio resources for moms, especially in honor of Mother's Day. So if you, are a mom, know a mom, want to be a mom, well, we'd love to get those resources in your hands. You can give Carissa a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or if you're listening and maybe not able to get to a phone, you can shoot us an email at myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page. You can submit a request that way so we can get you a nice gift for Mother's Day. We'll be right back with Becky Johnson in just a minute on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're talking about moms today in honor of Mother's Day coming up on Sunday. And I was enjoying just chatting with my girlfriends yesterday about Mother's Day because I told my husband long ago, I said, here's the deal. I don't want to do anything for Mother's Day except golf and have a lunch that I don't have to cook and be with my kids. That's all I want to do. And then yesterday I had my calendar out and I was trying to figure out, I'm cooking brunch. It's going to rain, so we can't golf. What am I doing for my mom? We're doing something else for his mom. Then, you know, there's grandmas, there's sisters-in-laws. And all of a sudden it got very crazy. It got crazy and nuts. Becky Johnson is my guest today, and she's written this great book called Nourished, A Search for Health, Happiness, and a Full Night's Sleep. And, you know, I just want a full afternoon of sleep. That's all I really want on Mother's Day. Why does that happen?
I don't know. I do think the longing of every woman is a guilt-free nap, though. I think it's because we are natural nurturers. And, again, it is natural to want to rescue, fix, take care of, nurture everyone else. If I could give one piece of advice to all women, it would be to stop several times during the day and ask yourself, what do I need right now? And you were very good about verbalizing exactly what you needed. Unfortunately, I
was a wimp, though. I was a wimp.
but you really have got to. So funny. I am on vacation right now, and as I'm looking out my window, there's a wisteria tree, and there is a mother morning bird sitting on a nest of eggs, and it's just like looking at a children's book. But that. What was interesting is I thought, well, she has just been there 24 hours a day all week. And my husband, Greg, said, you know, I don't think it's the same bird. And sure enough, I looked it up, and this particular species, the father bird, does the morning watch. So he is the one that's sitting on the nest until noon. And I thought, even in – creation, God gives moms breaks. Even the very best mothers need to have breaks. We've got to stop and nourish ourselves. And here's the thing, we all think, always think, oh, well, I'll do it someday. I'll get to it when life slows down or after I take care of this aging parent or this small toddler. And I was one of those women, and I hit a wall. I mean, I seriously almost had, maybe I did have, looking back on it, I think I might have had, you know, the old-fashioned nervous breakdown. I just hit a wall, and I had all the symptoms of a panic attack and not being able to think. And what had happened was after some therapy, I realized I had just overgiven. I had never thought that I was worth giving to. And we had had people living in our homes for 2 years that took a lot of nurturing and care. And I found my identity in doing that. I felt like because the Lord loved me and saved me, I owed him the response to give without ever thinking of myself. And boy, is that a mistake. Mm. We have to have a way to fill up our pitcher full of energy and love before we can give out. And I have learned that it is the most loving thing I can do for other people. It's not always easy. I have had to learn the word no. I've had to learn to tell my husband, no, I cannot do that right now. I can do that 3 days from now. Today, I am taking a break. Hmm. So that is the, I guess, the gift I would want to give every mother that is hearing my voice right now. Stop and ask yourself, what do I need in this moment? And know that your value is precious to the Lord. And unless you take time to self-care and nourish yourself, you will hit a wall and you're really not doing your family any favors.
I think there's a story that your daughter Rachel wrote about in the book, if I have that right. It could have been
yes.
You. I'm not sure. The way they've put this book together is that Becky writes some and Rachel writes some, and it's just a great way to get two different perspectives. Anyway, the story was about a woman who came up during a speaking event to, I think, Rachel, and she was talking about healthy cooking and how do we take care of ourselves, how do we take care of our families, with just a few suggestions on how to cook in a more healthy manner. And the woman said, well, you know, I can't do that because I work full time and maybe I'll get to it someday. And her response was precious because she just said, well, this is someday, you know, you need to start doing things now. What's your response to that? Whether it's people saying, well, I will start working out. I will start taking care of myself. I will start saying no. I will start eating in a more healthy manner someday, but I can't do it right now. How do you respond to that?
Well, we have a chapter kind of at the beginning of the book about how we change and how to make those changes. So, you know, we've all made these grandiose declarations, New Year's Eve resolutions that we are going to change. And then a week later, nothing has happened. And so here's what we have discovered that actually works rather than just sounds good in our heads. We call it nourishing compromises. And what that means is that, let's say that you decide, you know, the typical one for women is, I'm going to lose 20 pounds. Mm-hmm. So every woman I know would love to do that. Well, a nourishing compromise would look at that and say, okay, let's look at this from two different angles. It's sort of like two friends coming together. And the first one is acceptance, just loving acceptance of where you are right now. And what can you accept about your situation? Could you possibly be asking too much of yourself? Could you be beautiful and fine the way you are? Could you just begin to embrace the body that God gave you? So that's part of it. The other one is take action, and that is to take action in some small way. For example, if I wanted to lose weight, which of course I do, I'm a woman. what I've done is I have accepted myself as I am. And we have a chapter on body acceptance too. And my daughter actually wrote me a letter at one time, and it just broke my heart. She basically said, "Mom, you've always told me that I was beautiful, so I don't really stress over that. But I see you struggling with accepting your beauty, and that breaks my heart." And so I began to take that seriously, and I'm not thin and tall and blonde. I am round and short and curvy, and I began to see That is actually beautiful. I began to look up women that, like I would look up fashion, my body size, beautiful. And I would see all these women in different shapes and sizes, and I began to see, oh, you know what? Beauty comes in lots and lots of different ways. So I began to work on more body acceptance. But at the same time, I also began to make myself move a little bit more, and I began to cook more nutritiously and made those changes. So I lost, you know, maybe 5 or 10 pounds naturally without a lot of work, and that was enough. I didn't need to lose the whole kit and caboodle. And even with the exercise, I'm not a natural exerciser, so I have to exercise in a way that's nourishing to me. And for me, activities where I'm actually doing something and accomplishing something is easier for me than actually going to a gym. Hmm. So I found an activity. I love to refurnish old furniture. I go to vintage stores and I'll find old little pieces of furniture and paint them with that chalk paint. And I am so sore and exhausted by the time I finish a piece. But that's my exercise. And it's fun.
Hmm. Well, and finding a way to just nourish your own body with that. You also write about how much better you feel if you've done something that just helps your body. It helps your body to actually relax. If you get some exercise in of any sort, then it helps your body to relax and it helps your mind to relax as well. Talk more about how that's been valuable for you.
Yes. You know, people are motivated in different ways. I call it in the book, there's the elephant and the rider, and this is not my concept. It came from another book. But what it is that inside we have sort of like, I call it the inner Dumbo. This is the part of us that seeks pleasure and fun. And then we have the rider. This is the part that wants to dictate and make plans. We have to make peace with both of those aspects of our brain before we will actually make change. And so when you talk about exercising, one of the things I've learned was that it immediately will lift your mood. Because I'm sort of an ADD person and I'm not a long-term planner, I will exercise because it makes me feel happier within an hour. That is easier for me than saying I'm going to be thinner or healthier someday. That goal is just too far for me. But knowing that I can elevate my mood, that I can change my brain, that I can calm down, that is a great motivator for me. So you have to kind of find what motivates you. In fact, my husband figured this out this week. He's been wanting to get off the couch and do a little bit more exercise but could not get motivated. This week he found a basketball and a hoop, and he loved it. It brought back his memories of high school, and he said, Becky, I finally found that thing that's going to connect the rider and the elephant, and I love this basketball thing. I'm going to go back to that.
We're talking with author Becky Johnson today about how to nourish a woman's soul. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Great to have you here this afternoon. We're talking about moms today. Everybody has one. Some people are one. I hope you fit into one of those categories. And we are also giving away lots of resources for moms. We have several books to give away and would love to get that into your hands. Or if you have yet to choose a gift for your mom, well, it won't be there on time, but you will get a gift at some point. We can get it out to you. Give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. I posted a little something on Facebook yesterday, a picture of my mom playing the guitar and me singing when I was a little girl, and just wrote that my mom taught me, amongst other things, one of the gifts that she gave me was she just taught me to love music. She is a pianist, a guitar player, an opera singer, but most of all, she just loves to sing and to praise God in worship. So she taught me so much about music. I play multiple instruments as well. Not well, but I do play multiple instruments and just love to worship God. And she is the person who taught me that. And then I ask people to post really what their moms have taught them. And I'm just going to read a couple of them. Pete said, my mom taught me not to take myself too seriously. great lesson. John wrote, "My mom taught me to love music, love language, love stars, love family, and most importantly, to love God." So what did your mom teach you? If you want to share something with us, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call again at 877-933-2484. But right now I have the opportunity to speak with author and speaker and blogger Becky Johnson, who has written a fabulous book along with her daughter, Rachel Randolph, called Nourished, A Search for Health, Happiness, and a Full Night's Sleep. So Becky, I know that you and Rachel both write a lot on your own. Why did you decide to do this together, and how does that kind of talk about your special relationship with your daughter?
Well, you know, it's interesting because tying into what you just said about what your mother taught you, the gift of writing, storytelling, and humor is one that has come down from my family tree, from the female side of my family tree. So my Aunt Etta, who is 90, was the first published writer in the book, in our life, and she wrote with Revell. Her first book was Help Is Only a Prayer Away years ago. Then my mom and I, about 20 years ago, wrote two books together. One was called Worms in My Tea and Other Mixed Blessings years ago. And then my sister began to write. She's a published author. And then my daughter had the gift, and I knew she did. Mm-hmm. It took her a while to believe it and accept it, but my daughter has just got this writing gift. It just pours down in the family tree. She also has a great sense of humor, and I grew up with women who love to laugh. So if I were to say what I got from my mother, I think the most important thing would be a sense of humor and laughter. You know, like at our family reunions, we would just go around and everybody would tell the most embarrassing or funny story that happened to them. Mm-hmm. So even when I was in junior high and maybe a terribly embarrassing thing would happen that would just mortify the average junior high girl, in the back of my mind there was always this thought, as like a silver lining, material for the reunion. So I always, no matter what happens to me, I seem to be able to look at it as if it's going to be funny tomorrow. And the faster I've gotten at that, the more life's quirks, life's interruptions. You know, it's always the disasters that make the funniest story. It's just that it happens a little faster for me.
Well, you compare yourself to Lucille Ball, right?
I mean, yes,
you told stories, and I'm like, I can totally see that.
I basically grew up with Lucy. My mother had the red hair and the bun, the whole nine yards. In fact, when my children were little, they were watching TV and saw an I Love Lucy rerun, and one of them said, "Mom, is that Granny?"
Yeah, she does do a lot of things that get her into trouble. And I loved that about her as well. And I feel like my mom shares some of those characteristics as well, because she was always teaching us something and showing us how to do something. And what that showed me, at least, was to be adventurous and to not shy away from trying something new, even though you might not be very good at it. Now, she did not know at the time that she had a type A daughter who likes to be good at everything. And so those lessons were really important for me to learn, because I had to see that you could do something just for the fun of it instead of doing something to be the best at it.
Isn't that funny how we often take a characteristic that's the opposite of our moms? My daughter is extremely type A. You and Rachel would so enjoy each other. It was so funny. We load the dishwasher, and we've actually put pictures online of the difference. And, you know, she loads the dishwasher like a lab scientist, and she says, "I load mine like a drunk monkey." She was at my house a couple of weeks ago, and she was trying to fix the dishwasher after I loaded it, and she finally just said in exasperation, "Mom, I can no longer participate in the loading of this dishwasher with a good conscience."
You know, that's a great segue into talking about relationships. You spend a great deal of your book just talking about how to nourish relationships with your spouse, relationships with your girlfriends, or with your daughters or sons. Why is it so important, and how is it so nourishing to us personally to have a good relationship and spend time on those relationships?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I lost an uncle a couple of nights ago, and I was just thinking, at the end, he was sick for a long time, at the end, all that really matters, all that you want to tell him is, "The Lord, loves you and we love you. It's love at the end. It is relationships that matter. And I'm studying now a little bit about Mediterranean romance countries for another project I'm working on. And what I've noticed about them is that so many times they have a blatant disregard for time and schedule, which is maybe not good, but what it allows them is to be interrupted, for relationships to come to the forefront of anything else, so that as in countries where there's a lot of high value in relationships and family and friends and marriages and children, where people are allowed to come in at any time, drop in, have a cup of coffee, you treat them like a king or queen, those people live to be like 100, and their happiness level just goes way out the door. You know, it's amazing. And so I think when we talk about relationships and why it matters, it's because God created us to be relational with Him and with each other. And at the end of life, it's all that matters. I mean, even Paul said, we can be a sounding gong or a cymbal or whatever it was, but it doesn't matter. Without love, you're nothing. It's the deal.
Mm. Yeah, I loved the section where you were writing about just girlfriends and how we are such a great resource to each other if we choose to be. But in this culture of comparison, sometimes we get a little wrapped up in wanting to present ourselves a certain way or present our families or our children a certain way. And that's when God usually has my child do something that's not good. Mm-hmm. So I cannot feel haughty about it. And then, but we get wrapped up in that instead of being relational. I will never forget how grateful I am to the woman who, I met when I first moved into, no, I had moved into my community, but I had just quit my job. I was going to be a stay-at-home mom for a while. And of course, I knew no stay-at-home moms. And my husband said, hey, I have this client and she's new and maybe you guys would get along. And we are friends to this day because she took the time to introduce me to everyone else in the community, to sit down and talk with me. And I never understood what a great gift that was until now.
I don't know what we would do without our friendships. You know, and what you said before that about, you know, trying to be somebody so that you'll connect with somebody else. Vulnerability is sort of a hot topic right now out there. But what I have always noticed, this is kind of a new thing, but I've always noticed this, that people bond over shared brokenness much more than even shared beliefs. And so I have always found that the easiest way to bond with somebody else is to be honest about a flaw or honest about a struggle, and that typically will open the door. Now, you don't want to just pour out, you know, all your dirty laundry or something to somebody you've just met, but just a little bit, a little layer of yourself and a little more layer as you've been given acceptance and safety, and especially if they share back with you. That's the way relationships are really, they're really sealed, not because we admire each other. I mean, we all know women we admire. Maybe we even think she's a spiritual giant. And when we leave her presence, we feel maybe not necessarily connected. We just feel maybe even a little less than, because I could never aspire to be like that woman. And then we all have that friend who is just sort of a porch swing friend where you could just, no, you can go sit in her presence, put your feet up, and relax. And when you leave her presence, you feel as if you've been with Jesus. You feel like you have been warmed and loved and encouraged, and you feel better. And she probably shared some of her flaws and some of her struggles. That's the way relationships really happen. I don't know why women get on this thing about being perfect or being better than each other, when actually it has the opposite effect on friendship.
I think some of the best conversations that I have had with women start with them saying to me something like this: I had no idea that you struggled with that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden a conversation opens up. And so I've just started to say, something like, it's all smoke and mirrors. I mean, some people are just really good at looking like they have it all together all the time. I happen to be one of those people, but all you need to do is move away the smoke and the mirrors and boom, you have just a regular person with the same exact concerns and fears and everything that you're feeling, I'm feeling too. And that just starts this conversation in kind of a humorous way where then we've reached this level where we can really get to know each other and who we are.
That is brilliant. I love that. It's all just smoke and mirrors. That's a great way to start a conversation.
I tell my husband that, too. If he says I look nice, I say, it's all smoke and mirrors. But
well,
that's another show. You have to write a different book about that.
It's so true. With social media, sometimes I'll say, okay, here's the stories I can't tell on Facebook. This is the real deal behind what you see. Yeah, we love that. We love a glimpse of the real person.
Yes, it's welcoming, and it makes you feel like you can have that conversation that you thought you weren't allowed to have before. So, and prayer is such a great way to do that as well, to just sit down and pray for someone about a concern that they have and share and open up that you've prayed for that too. And then all of a sudden, someone doesn't feel like they're alone. And I love when God puts those people into our lives who have that same thing that we have been struggling with. And then all of a sudden we have this companion for life.
Exactly. And you know, the deepest ones, the deepest friends, know how to sort of volley the conversation back and forth so that it's sort of even and pretty much even give and take. And then they rejoice with you when you rejoice. There's shared joy. And they also are sharing your sorrows. So there's an old Swedish saying that shared joy is double joy, shared sorrow is half a sorrow. And that is exactly how I would say most of my very best friends are. And we all have those. And then we have some friends where we give a little bit more. And then we have, for me, there's also... There's this concept that we have this one-size-fits-all friend, and some people get that. Some people get that kindred spirit and bosom buddy, that perfect friend. Most of us don't get that person. What we get is maybe a person that is a friend that we go to a movie with, and we love to laugh with her. And, here's a friend that will tell me the truth, and I love to talk to her when I really need to know what's going on and I need a unbiased perspective. And there might be a friend that you just enjoy walking with or working out with. So there's kind of like friends for different reasons, and there's also friends for different seasons. I've had very close friends for a season of time, and that friendship maybe didn't carry on when we moved or life circumstances changed, but I look back and I'm just blessed the time that we had, that we were there for each other.
Well, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that same line of reasoning, except with our husbands. You write a lot about just how to nourish your marriage and how couples can kind of get to know each other in a way that's nourishing both of their souls. So we're going to talk about that when we come back with author, speaker, blogger, writer Becky Johnson, who's written a book called Nourished, A Search for Health, Happiness, and a Full Night's Sleep. Coming up on Connecting Faith. Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. We're talking today with author Becky Johnson, who's written a fabulous book called Nourished. And we've been talking about nourishing your soul, nourishing relationships. Of course, one of those most important relationships, if you are married, is the relationship that you have with your husband or husband-to-be. And there's a great chapter, Becky, that you and Rachel have written on the secrets of the happiest couples. And one of those has to do with romance. And I found myself just kind of giggling through this entire chapter, and I say that because she was trying to be funny, of course, not because I was giggling at serious things, but you were talking about romance and that men and women have kind of a different idea of what is romantic, and we should probably have a conversation where we figure that out rather than being resentful of the fact that our spouse isn't being romantic when they think they are. Talk more about that.
Yes, that, oh gosh, this, that chapter was so fun. Rachel and Jared have a very different type of relationship, and they have a fabulous marriage than Greg and I. But Greg and I have kind of a naturally romantic relationship, just sort of like he's really good with words and very sweet and attentive. And Rachel and Jared are just as much in love, but they're just it took them a little while to figure out what romance was to him versus what romance was to her. And he was doing all the things that he had read in books, like bring her flowers and give her compliments. And what she really felt was romantic, what really connected her heart to him, was just sitting down and having a face-to-face long conversation. And then that would lead to romance. And so, yeah, I think you just have to have a little talk about that. What is it? And, you know, sometimes it is it's the funny things, the odd things, the quirky things that actually attract us to each other. There's a story that I share in that chapter about seeing irritants as endearments. And this is just, to me, the classic example of the way Greg lives with me. I'm scatterbrained. I have been diagnosed with ADD, and for some reason, I have this habit of when I take lids off of things, like the milk container or whatever it happens to be, pickles, I throw the lids away. I don't know that I'm doing it. I don't know why I do it. There is no explanation for it. Well, Greg asked me, please try to remember to put the lids back on things, and I thought I was doing well because I would open the refrigerator and everything was lidded, and then one day, I opened a drawer in the kitchen, and I found that it was full of lids. And he had been, he just gave up trying to train me. And so he just had saved lids and has just been putting them back on when I take them off. And he thinks it's funny, thank God. And he sees this, what could be so irritating, as an endearment, and he's just learned to work around it. He realized this is something I can't change, I don't know how I'm going to change, and he just loves me. I think that's a big part of romance and marriage, is honestly being able to look at each other and maybe see the cute little boy or the struggling little girl and side of this grown person and giving them that grace to just be who they are, love them as they are, work around them when you can. And another thing we do is, and we've noticed with couples that are still romantic in their 70s, and my parents would be in this category, is that they never stop flirting. They flirt all the time. So don't ever let that go to the back burner. If you haven't learned the art of flirting with your spouse, you know, you can always start with just a text. Sometimes Greg and I text flirts across the room. We're sitting in the same room with each other. We each have our cell phone.
I've seen 13-year-olds do that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, I was telling my husband last night at dinner, so my kids were there as well, that I was listening to a radio show, another host who had an author on, and they were talking about how you can kind of sweep your partner off their feet. And this author said, you know, if you're trying to sweep your husband off your feet, off his feet, make sure that give him some time to get away and to kind of, you know, nourish himself with other friends or maybe a golf weekend or, you know, something that he can do to kind of get away and replenish his soul, get away from the drudgery of work. And, if you're trying to, husbands, if you're trying to, you know, give your wives something special, I mean, find some time for them to go shopping with their friends or maybe go to the spa. And my husband got this funny look in his face, and my sons did as well. And they're like, Dad, you better send Mom on the golf trip. And it was just, my husband said, I've learned long ago the power of the 9-iron. So when I read your chapter, I was just laughing out loud because you said, you know, flirt with your spouse, tell them what it is that kind of gets you more charged up, that gets you to be thankful for who they are and how they know you. Yeah. And And I thought that is just so perfect and so right, because if you would just say, I love flowers, but I'd rather have a nine iron. I mean, why not? Because it will kind of get that conversation started.
And, we're all so unique. And when you learn what your spouse really fills their tank, and you give that to them, or you applaud it, or celebrate it in any way, that just means the world to us. It just makes our hearts just overflow. So, yes, you know, a lot of mothers may be getting flowers or candy and things on Mother's Day. It might be a good idea to ask her, what would you want? And you may be surprised. It may be a nine iron. It may be, what I really want is for everybody to leave me alone, give me a book to read in complete silence without guilt, maybe a guilt-free nap. You just don't know unless you ask.
Right. You don't know, and we're all so different, and I found that to be true for our husbands as well. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's been a great lesson for me, and I think one of the great gifts that God has given me is just an ability to learn more about the person that I love by asking those questions. And how would I know to do that unless someone gave me a suggestion like that? And God gives us those suggestions as well in His Word, that if we are to truly love someone, we need to know them intimately and deeply. And what's the best way to do that but to ask them?
It is. It's like getting your PhD in each other. And when you begin to look at your mate as someone to study, and don't ever, ever assume that you know everything about the person you're married to. There are always multiple layers. Now, with men, sometimes it's hard to get them talking. But what I found works is, Greg actually is the golfer in our family. So I will go, you know, ride along in the golf court with him and bring a little picnic lunch or something. And while it's sort of the by-the-way conversation with men who may not be prone to just sit down and talk and share their heart, but if you will share what they love to do alongside them for a little while, those conversations that you long for, the deep ones, will just sort of naturally come out as you spend time with them doing the things that they love and they unwind. That's typically the way I found that we can get men to talk about those things that they don't always just want to blurt out.
Right. Well, and you suggest taking a marriage checkup weekend. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and why that's important?
Yes. Now, this is Rachel's suggestion, and she is married with a 3-year-old, and she is about to have another little baby girl any day now. And so her life space is much different than mine. Greg and I could be together 24/7 because we don't have any children and we both have flexible jobs. But her life is quite different, and her husband's a coach. So they have to schedule these appointments. And what they do is about every 2 months they schedule a weekend away. I get relatives to watch the baby, and they have a list of questions, which is in the book, some of the ideas and some of the things that they talk about, and they do a marriage checkup weekend. They check into a hotel nearby, and, you know, they just kind of spend the first part of the weekend and relaxing and unwinding, and then they go through these questions. And God bless Jared. He is very he's just such a good sport about making sure that this happens. He's proactive. He's proactive. That's a better word than being a good sport. He's proactive about this weekend. And he is also just as engaged in asking the questions and finding out what's going on, finding the temperature, how his wife's doing. Are you satisfied with the routines? What can we do to change a little bit? Another thing I love about them, I go there to Texas. I live in Colorado. She's in Texas. And they have this little sign that's sort of a dry erase sign. And they take turns writing on that little sign something they appreciate about each other, just whenever it sort of crosses their mind. And I love getting a little glimpse of what they appreciate about each other on that little, just a little thing. But Rachel would say that that's one of the things that has kept them connected when life is so crazy. Because sometimes she'll have a kind thought about him, but he's at work. But she can write it on that little dry erase board, and when he gets home, he'll see it.
Well, that's a great tip to end on. Becky, we thank you so much for your time. I've just had a great time talking with you and hearing some great tips for how to become more nourished in our own lives. I hope you have a happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. You too.
Thank you very much. And if you've been listening today, I hope you as well have just a wonderful Mother's Day. Be kind to your mom. Be kind to yourself. And if you want more information on Becky's book, you can go to laughcrycook.com.